Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Hey everyone, it's Michelle Williams, and I love being able to share my story with you on my podcast, Checking In with Michelle Williams, where my guests and I, we get real as we share the ups and downs of our mental health journeys, and I'd love for you to join me. Hey, it's going to be your church and your turn up. So listen to Checking In with Michelle Williams every Tuesday, a part of the Black Effect on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of The Takecast. My name is Davis Matic. You guys can find me on Twitter at Davis Matic. In this episode of the show, I am joined by John George. You might be able to find him on Twitter at The Esports Plug. And as you might be able to tell from that introduction and the title of this podcast is about teaching you how to play the only thing that is left in the DraftKings lobby, League of Legends DFS. Don't laugh, because if you're listening to this, you want to play. You like to gamble. You like to play DFS, and you're interested. So that's what this podcast is about. You know, we kind of run through the positions, lineup construction, and how everything works. And yeah, if you guys have any other questions, of course, reach out to me. Reach out to John. He's more than happy to chat with you guys about how it works, about the rules, about lineup construction, all of that. If you want bonus episodes of the show, you can go to patreon.com/takecast. You can support the show by leaving a rating and review on iTunes, and you could subscribe to dailyroto.com using the promo code Janis, J-A-N-I-S. And now let's get into the episode. All right, everyone, welcoming in John George. You might know him as at the Esports Plug. And I mean, pretty obvious reasons why we are having this conversation. As the world of sports just kind of burns around us, there is still DFS left to be played. You want to cash in your missions. You don't want to withdraw your entire DraftKings balance. There are contests left to be had. And I might add, decent size contests, like that you can get some decent action down on these contests. John, how are you doing, man? How are you enjoying all of this sudden attention to your sport?
Yeah, not too bad, man. It's been a little bit wild to have people finally put the spotlight on us a little bit, but yeah, it's been great having big contests. We never had 10,000 to first, 20,000 to first tournaments before just recently, so it's been awesome. We've been loving it.
Yeah, it is very cool. I have to say researching it has been pretty interesting, but you know, before we get into the nuts and bolts, you know, just tell the audience a little bit about yourself. How did you find League of Legends wagering? Are you, you know, did you start playing poker and came to DFS? Like just where what's your DFS journey been like?
So, I started really young with playing Counter-Strike. For people that know that game, I traveled around and played like back when there really was no such thing as a professional gamer. The best gamers in the world earn like $5,000 a year. But I traveled around and played Counter-Strike. And then from Counter-Strike, I started playing Magic the Gathering and made the pro tour of Magic the Gathering. And through Magic, I found poker. A lot of professional Magic players started becoming poker players because it was a similar skill set. And there was a lot more money to be made in poker. So I played poker for a living for about 10 years. The online poker ban, I moved overseas. I came back. Had never really had a job before, didn't really know what to do. And my brother introduced me to the game League of Legends. I just started playing it for fun. And I started playing on DraftKings to play basketball. Like, I enjoy basketball, and I'm not a very good basketball DFSer, but I did start playing on there to play basketball. And then one day I noticed that they were adding League of Legends ones, and I was just like, hey, I know a little bit about that. And I asked my brother to fill me in a little bit. And once he'd filled me in a little bit more, I started paying attention to it, and been doing it ever since for, I don't know how many years it's been now, 4 years, maybe 5 years.
Wow. I had no idea they've even been running it for that long. I mean, like, obviously, like, I've seen it up there in the lobby forever, but like, I don't think Maybe I played one contest when it first launched, but I think I literally probably have not played the entire time it's been there, and I would assume 98% of the player base on DraftKings has been the same.
Yeah, that sounds about right. And honestly, my concept of time is so awful that for all I know, it's only been 2.5 years or 3 years, but it feels like it's been about 4 or 5 since they've had it on there.
Do we think that that FanDuel is going to offer a game? So far FanDuel has created a game for Survivor and for the Democratic debates. So I'm thinking that FanDuel will try and generate a game for this. Though it's not like I could say for certainty. I don't know anyone there.
Yeah, you would think they would put it on there, and I wouldn't be surprised honestly if the major leagues are going to stay offline for a while. There's other esports, like League is not the only one. Counter-Strike is a really good one that has tournaments fairly often, is very easy to score. I wouldn't be surprised if they add another game or two while they're, in this hiatus on the major sports.
Yeah, I think that is pretty interesting. So the idea behind this podcast is, I kind of want this to be evergreen a little bit. And, when people are asking me 2 weeks from now when we're recording this, like, have you been playing League of Legends? How do I learn? Yada, yada. Like, I kind of want to be able to point them to at least, the first 15 minutes, 20 minutes or so of this. So broad strokes, what is the goal of League of Legends DFS in an individual lineup? How are you racking up points? What are the positions? And what am I thinking about when I click into, the $10 with 5K to first League of Legends contest?
So there's very limited things. I guess I should probably explain how the game works to people.
Yes, that would be good.
League of Legends is played 5-on-5. It is played it's a video game, obviously, so it's played on a map. And on the map, there are 3 lanes. One of them goes to the bottom, one of them goes to the top, one of them goes down the middle, and the rest of the map is covered in kind of like a forest area. Each team has a player that plays the top lane, a player that plays the middle lane, a player called the jungler who roams around through that jungle area, and then 2 players that play in the bot lane. They're just kind of slowly having little skirmishes with their lane opponents and trying to push towards the enemy base, essentially, is what's going on. So the way that you score points as far as DFS, it's very similar to other games in that there's just a few things that you're getting points for.
Right.
You get points for kills when one of your players kills one of the enemy players. You get points for assists when one of your players helps kill an enemy player. And you get points for creep score, which is there's a bunch of little minions running around the map that aren't controlled by anybody. And when one of your guys kills one of them, you get points for that as well.
Okay, so pretty basic, right? You are selecting, and so for those of you, if you do not have your DraftKings screen up right now, and why would you? You just clicked on this in your feed. What you are filling out, I would compare it to filling out. To me, it was most like filling out an NFL showdown lineup in terms of the salary cap constraints and kind of how things work. So you're selecting a captain, and then why don't you kind of run us through the positions and then the team quotient of the lineups?
Yep. So you're going to have a captain, and then you get to pick a top laner. A top laner tends to be like somebody who plays like a bruisery beef ball type champion that can take a lot of damage. They don't get a lot of kills generally. They can sometimes, but they tend to be kind of on their own island. They don't score super well for DFS. The jungler is the next position. The jungler is the guy who makes all the action happen, especially in the early game. So junglers tend to score pretty well. There's a wide variety of different kinds of junglers. Your mid laner tends to be like a mage. They'll be somebody that has lots of bursty damage abilities, but they're pretty easy to kill. They will score a lot of points for DFS. In the bottom lane, you have 2 players, an AD carry and a support. Your AD carry will be your number one source of damage most of the time. They're essentially like an archer, somebody that shoots from long range, does a lot of damage, usually very easy to kill. The fact that they're very easy to kill is why they're paired in the bottom lane with a support, which is a person whose whole job is to make sure that they don't die, basically.
Right.
Play someone that has some way to stun opponents or heal their AD carry or something to stop the AD carry from dying. As far as for your DFS lineups, AD carries and mid laners score the highest. But I will say supports and tops, even though they're not high scoring positions, are the most variant positions. Really good top laners are a lot better than average top laners.
Than bad ones? Yeah.
Yeah, whereas AD carries, if their team is winning for the most part, they score pretty well, no matter how good they are.
So it's like the ADC as it is represented on DraftKings, that might be more like a quarterback where so for people who don't even know, we need to go back even further. The way that these DraftKings slates are set up is that these are games in between two esports teams. Each esports team has five players. What would you say the average slate size is? Like 3-4 matches most of the time?
Yeah, they go between 2 and 5 games. You're almost never going to see a slate that's more than 5 games.
So yeah.
2 to 5.
So, and I guess I've been playing these slates for like 3-4 slates now, and kind of just, so I am not the expert, right? So these are, I'm kind of asking questions as things are going. And I guess an observation would be that the ADCs are likely to, on the winning teams, they are all going to score well. Provided that you select the ADC from the winning team, they are going to get in between, 80 to 120 points is kind of the range of where they're likely to be, something like that.
Yeah, in China especially, one thing that a lot of people might not realize, because we're about to open up the other regions again, North America and Europe,
We're
on hiatus and they're about to come back. China plays best of three, North America and Europe play best of one. So you're going to have different, like kind of a different setup
right.
of slates when they come in. But yeah, for a 3-game slate, an 80 carry on a winning team should score 70 or more points almost every time.
So if you could let's try and compare these to some positions in other sports, maybe so people can understand a little bit. What do you think the most comparable for a top laner would be? Is there a good parallel to selecting guys in other sports?
Man, I'm trying to think. So a top laner, I would say a top laner reminds me, and I'm just doing this off the top of my head, so it's not a great comparison, but a top laner reminds me of a 3-and-D player in basketball. They can can have really good games. If they're going off and they hit a bunch of threes, they can have really good games. The majority of the time, they don't score that well. It kind of depends if the situation comes up where they can go off, but for the most part, they're going to score lower than, you know, like,
so kind of like small forward on FanDuel, where like you're taking Tabo Cephalosha, you're taking Matisse Thybulle, Furkan Korkmaz style guys. Yeah. Okay, that makes sense. What about the jungler position?
So let's see. A jungler is involved. A jungler is like a point guard. I would say like a Rajon Rondo. Junglers are involved a lot in especially in the early games. They don't necessarily kill a lot of people, but they're involved in a lot of things. It also kind of depends on how their team plays. If they're an aggressive team, the jungler is going to be involved in almost all their plays. So they get a lot of assists. They can get a lot of kills, but I would say they're like a point guard.
Okay. And then we think that the mid laners and the ADCs, they're kind of like running backs, quarterbacks, like the guys who concentrate a ton of the fantasy points, and then support maybe like wide receiver threes or something. I don't know.
Yeah, they're kind of hard to compare because the only thing about supports is they don't really get any kills and they don't kill minions. So there's like two forms of DraftKings points that supports just basically don't get, or at least not very often. They're entirely reliant on assists.
So, yeah, so are there bonuses awarded for in the Chinese or Japanese system? Like, so in tennis, if you win in two sets instead of having to go to the third set, there's a bonus. Is that the way that it works for DraftKings League of Legends as well?
Yeah, they get game not played bonuses if they win. If they win 2-0 in a best of three, they get a game not played bonus. I will say it's always a good thing. You're never going to be mad about it. But sometimes in China, you'd almost rather if they didn't, depending on what the matchup is, because China's
just to get more kills.
It's the highest scoring region by a lot, and sometimes the 20 points you would get from a game not played is not as much as they would have scored if they had lost the game.
Right. Okay. Yeah. That does. Yeah. That makes some sense. So, in terms of thinking about this, because the easiest way to learn something new is to relate it to something that you knew before, right? It's just easier for your brain to draw those comparisons. And to me, the research and the thought process for selecting players for League of Legends is a lot like tennis, because and correct me if I'm wrong, but sort of the best way to create League of Legends lineups is to select 4 players, including the team, from a favored team, and then 3 players from either a slight favorite or a slight underdog. And that, because there's obviously going to be a ton of correlation, because winning or losing is just going to have such a huge impact on the score.
Yeah. And that's one of the things that makes it really different from a lot of the other things. I think tennis is a good example. Like you said, MMA is a good example of like a sports where you really care whether or not your person is going to win. It's less important how good they are and more important whether or not their team is going to win. So I do think those are like pretty sort of apt comparisons. I do think you're right about playing four players from one team and three players from another is the most common core build that's correct. I would not count the team slot as a player from a team.
Really? Okay.
The team slot is not related to the things that help players score points. The things that help players score points and the things that help teams score points are completely different. So,
okay.
Like the bloodiest game of the day, whoever you think is going to get the most kills, you don't want their team slot, because their team slot doesn't care about how many kills they get. You want their players.
Okay, so what are we looking for in the team slot? Is that the one where you want quick match, you know, just over, they win in two sets or two games, I guess, two maps?
No, actually, it's pretty much better for everything if the games go longer, but the team slot cares about how many buildings they kill. Like the other team has little buildings on the way to their nexus. It cares about how many neutral monsters they kill. There's some monsters sitting in the jungle that the teams can go try to kill if they think they're strong enough. But the team slot doesn't care at all about kills other than the first kill of the game. There is a bonus for first blood for the team spot.
Okay.
But yeah, like a team could score really well in a game where their team did not get very many kills. The team slot could still score well.
So in terms of just in terms of thinking about the team slot, what are just some of the things that you are looking out for? Like you're going to go, well, actually, this is a good question. Let's just transition to the research question right away. What is the research process like for a League of Legends slate? Where are we going? Are there great resources? What stats are we looking at? You know, are we tracking Vegas odds? You know, kind of how are we thinking about these things?
So if you don't want to learn about League of Legends, if you just want to play the DFS, but you don't care about like watching the games and learning about exactly what's going on, if you just want to take like a pure stats-based approach to the game, the Vegas odds would be helpful for you. I will say like having an idea of who you think is going to win each of the matchups is pretty important, since you care about having only winners on your lineup. It's pretty important to have an idea
right.
of who you think is going to win. But there are some great resources. There's a website called Oracle's Elixir. If you go there, you can see stats for every player and every team in every league. And there are some very valuable stuff there. If you go to Gamepedia, you can find all the team's records, the scoreboards from their previous games, all kinds of stuff like that. That stuff is fantastic. The stats that I use the most, and especially if you're a beginner, that I think would be really valuable for you, is going to something like Gamepedia, looking at scoreboards, and coming up with what I call a kills per win and a deaths per loss number for each team. You need to know how many kills this team gets on average when they win, and you want to know how many deaths a team has on average when they lose. And you want to play matchups
right.
where the team you think is going to win has a high kill per win, and the team you think is going to lose has a high deaths per loss. That way you can try to get the maximum number of kills out of a game. You can also, when you're deciding how you want to stack a team, there's a stat called kill participation that's on Oracle's Elixir. We'll show you what percentage of a team's kills this player is involved in. And when I was talking about how like tops and supports can be very variant, this is where they can be very variant in how often they participate in kills. You want to play guys with high kill participation.
Yeah, so coaching, Someone coming from this from the outside would not think of like, oh, I need to think about how this team is coached or their strategy. But yeah, very, very similar to any other sport, right? Like a team-based sport, it's not like everyone's going out there without a plan, right? Like it's not like these five guys are going out there and they're just going to go play a game with their bros. Like they have a coach, they have a strategy. What are some of the different strategies that teams employ?
So there's definitely, like, just on a very basic level, there's definitely aggressive teams and conservative teams. To understand this, you kind of have to understand that League of Legends has 148 champions in it. And at the beginning of each game, the teams draft which champions they're going to use this game. They get to ban some, and then they draft the ones that they want to play. And different champions are good at different things. Some of them are very good at the beginning of the game, but they're not so good later. Some of them are only good at the late game, but they're really bad at the beginning. there's a lot of different kinds of strategies that you can construct using the different kinds of champions.
Okay.
More aggressive teams are going to draft more aggressive champions more often, and they're going to try to win the game that way. But yeah, so the teams are coming in with strategies that are based on what their opponents do. If you know your opponent is the most aggressive team in the league, you might not be able to take late game champions because they might just kill you before you get to the late game. You might have to try to pick champions that can have a power spike before the other team has finished trying to win the game. There's a lot of different kinds of things that are a little bit maybe too deep to discuss on sort of an evergreen beginner's discussion on it. But the champions that they're picking and the strategies that they employ tend to come down to early game focused strategies, mid game focused strategies, and end game strategies. And there are teams that do those things at varying, you know, percentages. Teams that tend to play late game strategies the majority of the time will be higher DraftKings scorers a lot of the time. The longer the games go, the more chances they have to score points. But those teams are also more likely to get blown out in the beginning of the game because they're not very good at the beginning. So those would be like the
more higher variance options to use in tournaments, right? Like teams that might be, like plus 350 underdogs, right? On the money line on whatever online sports book you use, but they might have, you know, wide ranges of outcomes in terms of if they're able to get past the early stages, then they're going to have a big advantage later on.
It can be like that. I would say the most consistent teams are mid-game focused teams. It's a strategy that's just a little bit safer. You have some battle against early teams. You have some battle against late teams. I would say if you're looking for an underdog, you want the most aggressive team you can, because League of Legends, unlike other games, and this is kind of where it gets weird. Imagine if in basketball, if you got up by 10 points, suddenly your three-pointers were worth 5. And if you got up by 20 points, then your three-pointers became worth 10. Like, the more that you get ahead, the more out of control
your leads. The more points
you
score.
Yeah, the more ahead you are, the more out of control you get. So very aggressive teams, no matter who they're playing, if they get a lead at the beginning of the game, they can continue snowballing that lead out of control. So yeah, aggressive teams tend to be better if you're trying to find an underdog.
Okay, what is the parity like in these leagues? So, for example, in the NFL, like a 14-point underdog can win a game, and people might be surprised, but it's not like something that's never happened before. Whereas in in the NBA, the Lakers, they're not losing to the Suns very often. If they do, it's like the leading story on ESPN, right? Yeah. In the United States, we have this scale of how we think about sports in terms of the outcome. Like an individual baseball game, anyone can win an individual baseball game. Where would you put League of Legends kind of on that spectrum of parity?
I think it depends on how good the favorite is. And this is league to league as well. Like all the leagues are different. The LPL in China is much different than the North American League as far as like the parity levels. In China, since that's like what's going on right now, the top 5 or 6 teams are significantly better than everybody else this year. Everybody else, I think, is pretty much wide open. Like, if any of the teams that are in, like, the bottom 12 are playing against each other, they've all got a reasonable shot to win. I mean, obviously, they're tiered out, and some are a little bit better than others or whatever, but the top 6 teams are on kind of a different level than the bottom 12 teams in China.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense. So what about the leagues that are about to begin back up? That so as of right now, if you are listening to this when we are recording it on Tuesday, March 17th, they are not in the DraftKings lobby, but they will be back soon, playing remotely, I believe.
Yeah, they're going to play online, which China's doing right now. I know a lot of people knew that, but that China already had their suspension for the coronavirus basically, and then they've come back and they're playing online.
Okay.
Now EU and North America are going to do that as well. In Europe, there's 2 teams or 3 teams that are significantly better than everybody else, way more so even than China. There's 2 or 3 teams that are way, way better. That's G2, Origin, and Fnatic. And everybody else is kind of similar. They could kind of all take games off of each other. North
Just
America,
depending on whatever happens?
Yeah. North America is a complete crapshoot. These regions are all of varying skill levels. Like China was the world champions the last 2 years, a team from China. Before that, Korea had won the world championship like 5 years in a row, and eventually you guys will be able to play Korea. North America is by far the worst of the 4 major regions.
I assume because the institutions are all new, right? Like the teams are newer and everything like that.
It has something to do with that. I think a lot of it also has to do with the fact that American teams care a lot more about making money. They tend to hire like kind of old washed up players that have good social media reach and stuff like that, rather than risking it for like really good young rookies and stuff like that. So there's
well, yeah,
a lot of
reasons, because it's all the fast twitch, right? Like, yeah. I mean, that's what these games are about. Like 17 year olds are like so much better at video games. Like I am 27 and I'm so bad at video games. Like, honestly, like I just, my eyes and my hands, they just don't work like they used to.
I do think we have a hard time knowing if that's 100% true. Cause like that was the thought for a long time, including me.
Right.
I am starting to think that we might start seeing pro gamers get older now that it's more socially acceptable. Because back in the day, even if you were a really good gamer, like I was very good when I was 14 at Counter-Strike. But yeah, that's because I had all day. Like, I could just skip school and just go to the LAN cafe and just play for 15 hours or whatever. And now I'm an adult with kids and a wife and a job. And if I want to play some Counter-Strike, it's like a game or two. And so I did start wondering years ago, like, if I was still able to put 15 hours a day in right now, would I really be that much worse than I was when I was 14? I really think we might start seeing people be able to go longer now that it's something.
Just because they have the time and the ability, and there's money in it. Well, there's money in it if COVID-19 doesn't destroy it. Well, you know what though? I mean, oh, I guess you would know this. How much has you know, the quarantining and everything, has like the Twitch viewership of these streams gone up? Has there been more interest in League of Legends as a whole?
I haven't seen any numbers on whether or not it's rose up. I actually would be interested to look into that. I would guess they're going to gain a lot of viewership from this because they, like I said, NA and EU took a week off, but they're going to be right back. And so we're going to have months here with all the leagues running where nothing else is really going on. Yeah, I would imagine we'll see a decent spike in viewership, but we'll have to find out.
Yeah. Okay. So let's think about lineup construction as a whole. You know, we talked a little bit about research. I guess my research process thus far in terms of trying to figure things out has just been going to online sports books, looking in the morning, looking at favorites, and then looking a little bit later in the afternoon and being like, okay, has these lines moved one way or the other, and just creating the four and three stacks. Though, I did not particularly realize that the team stacking, I guess it actually maybe might make more sense than to do the team stack based on the underdog that you like as opposed to the favorite.
What I would say is if you're playing four of a team, that should be the team that you think is going to be the bloodiest team that day.
Okay.
And then whoever the other two spots that you're playing, because there's only six players in a team slot. So you play four players from whoever you think the bloodiest game is going to be, two players from whoever you think the second bloodiest game is going to be, and then I would play the team slot from that second team. Whoever is not the bloodiest, because you can play a third team as your team slot, but you're adding some variance. It's going to be a good idea in GPPs maybe to try to get some solo ownership. But if you want to reduce your variance, I would just play the team slot from whoever your second team is. The biggest thing is I wouldn't play the team slot as part of your four-man stack. Because it doesn't care about how many kills they get, where all your players care.
So I would say that is the number one most counterintuitive thing from coming to it from the outside, thinking about team sports, thinking about it kind of from the tennis angle. Like in tennis, it's the exact opposite. The shorter the match is, the quicker you win the games, the quicker you win the sets, the more points you get. Like Djokovic against like some 16 seed, like he can get 90 points and win in straight sets. Whereas, I do not know any team names, so I'm not going to try with one, but like, you know, best team, they win 20 minutes in both. That's actually not great for the team. So that would be counterintuitive for someone coming from an American sports mindset into setting, the team slot. So kind of what would be your basic strategy in mass multi-entry? I'm sure there are going to be lineup builders coming out for this. Kind of how would you think about setting percentages? How would you think about, would you want your whole pool to be four and three? Would you want, obviously, you know, you would have to set rules so that the stacking would be enforced, or do you want to do some kind of random, you know, 3-3-1, 3-2-2, you know, what, like, how would you kind of set or think about your pool?
So I've been having to evolve with this just like everybody else, because our tournaments are so much bigger now than they used to be. And so you have to kind of create a new, we didn't have any tournaments where you could enter 140 lineups up until just recently. So in the past, doing the 4-3 was clearly the correct thing to be doing, in my opinion, no matter what tournament you were playing. Now, I think there is a good argument to do things like playing 4-2 and a different team or something along those lines, throwing something else in there just to try to get individual ownership. Because, well, I think the 4-2 lineups are still by far the most, or 4-3 lineups are still most likely to be the best lineup. You are seeing in the results here that they're 50-way owned, like very, very commonly. Because most
the easiest way to do it, so like the biggest favorite and then the like least amount of underdog, that's not the grammatically correct way to say that, but the most popular team and then the most popular underdog, that's going to be, that stack is going to be what, 10, 15% of the player pool in some, like with those players flipped in some variety.
Yeah, I mean, if you looked, I think it was last night, the highest priced team on the slate was like between 40 and 70% owned, depending on which player you were dealing with. So, you're definitely going to run into copies. I will say, quite often, the team that's the highest priced on DraftKings is priced that way because they're the biggest favorite. That doesn't necessarily mean that they're the most likely to score the highest. There's been a number of slates so far where the highest priced team was a team that doesn't tend to score that well. They're just a really big favorite. And so people are kind of ignoring some of these middle range teams.
Which, by the way, that was, again, something that is counterintuitive for someone coming from the outside. Because, again, tennis, MMA, that doesn't really happen where you're a big favorite and you don't rack up the DK points. But, for example, this night slate that is about to go off, and it's not relevant, so I'm not even going to say the team name, but there is a team that is like a minus 250 favorite, and like none of their players average more than like 45 points a game, even their guys who score a ton of points, which is like, you just don't think about those things, but it is relevant to the scoring.
And this is something that's super important to bring up. So a follower of mine on Twitter that I've known for years asked me to talk about this on one of these podcasts because it's infuriating him so much, and so this is a perfect spot for it. Average points per game is a terrible stat to use for League of Legends because the scores that people score in wins and losses are so different. If you see a player that's averaging 60 points a game, let's say, what that really means a lot of the time is that when he wins, he scores 100, and when he scores 20. And all you really care about is what he scores when he wins. Because if you put him in your lineup and he loses, it doesn't matter. Your lineup's dead. So all you really care about is what he scores when he wins. And so their average points is kind of a lie a lot of the time because there are teams that score decently in losses, but you're never winning a GPP or something playing these guys and they lose.
Yeah, to win a tournament, you need all seven slots to correlate with a one match.
Yeah, like pretty much. I mean, occasionally it doesn't go that way, but for the most part, yeah, you need all of your players to win. So what you really care about is what their upside is, basically. What do they score when they win? I don't care what they score when they lose, because if they lose, I'm just dead as it is.
Yeah.
So a lot of these guys, I've seen a lot of people like building their optimizers and stuff, and they're using the average points per game, and it's not a useful stat. I highly recommend not caring about what their average DK points per game is.
Yeah, which I think is reasonable. This is far beyond my scope. I don't have the math skills for this, but well, first of all, do you have projections built for this stuff?
I don't have projections per se. I do keep a spreadsheet where I personally keep track of like every team's kill per win and deaths per loss. Every morning when I wake up, I look at all the scores from last night and put them into the spreadsheet. With a player, it's fairly easy. Just go to their match history, look at all the matches that they won, add them together and divide by the number of matches that they've won, and you can see what they're averaging in wins. So if you're considering playing, if you think these are the two teams you want to play, all you got to do is go through their 10 players and quickly calculate what each of them averages and wins, and you can get a decent idea.
If you were wanting to model out DK scoring, like in projections for this, so obviously like it's a more complex mathematical discussion than someone can have on a podcast, but what kind of inputs would you want to be feeding into those projections? Like, is there, like, I assume there's like matchup strength type stuff that, and you know, all kinds of stuff, I'm sure.
Yeah, you would want to know how many points the other team gives up to this position, because teams definitely tend to play a certain way. And if they're like a bot-focused team that usually loses, then they're going to give up a lot of points to the enemy bot lane. If they're a top-focused team that usually loses, they're going to give up points to the top lane. So you would definitely want kind of like a DVP-type stat for all the teams. Points and wins is definitely the most important thing to know, like I was just talking about. Kill participation, super important. You need to know how often they're involved. So all that kind of stuff is all super relevant.
Okay. All right. So what else would someone need to know? They've listened to this. They're excited. They're like, okay, I want to go play. I want to try and make some money. I don't want to be dead money. What advice would you have?
The sad truth of it that I don't think people are going to want to hear is I think if you want to make good money long-term, you're going to have to actually care about League of Legends. Like,
okay.
it's too important to understand the matchups and who the best players are. Teams tend to play a certain ways and you need to know that. My best piece of advice I would give people if you're coming in and you're thinking, maybe I want to try to make some money with this long-term, is to pick one region and care about it. Start watching all the games from that region, try to figure out what's going on. It doesn't take a ton of research. Like, League of Legends is a free game. If you want, go download it and play. Just mess around with it. See if you enjoy. I'll play with anybody that wants to play with me if you message me on Twitter. We'll have fun. It's an easy game. And you can figure out what's going on with it fairly, like, it'll take you a week to figure out and, like, understand what the fights look like and why things are happening the way they are. And then if you focus on one region, you can figure out who those teams are and why they play the way that they do within a month easily. I wouldn't try to play all four regions if you're going to do that. It's very hard work trying to keep up with what's going on all four regions. So I would just pick, you know, just China or just North America, just Europe, whatever, and just focus it. Watch all the games. It doesn't take that many hours of the week to watch all the games from one region. So,
well, yeah, it's like the matches don't even really take all that long, right? Like, they're kind of wrapped up in what, like an hour, hour and a half.
If you watch like North America, it's going to take you like 10 hours a week. If you watch China, it's a little bit tougher because they play best of threes and they're playing every day to make up for their coronavirus break. But there's highlights on YouTube as well. So you can watch a 4-minute highlight video that'll show you where all the kills happened, how they happened, who got them. And that'll give you an idea of how the teams are playing. So
do you know of any content providers, so someone's listening to this, they want to watch, which by the way, everything's on Twitch, right?
You can watch it on Twitch. You can watch it on YouTube. If you type in the name of the league, so China is called the LPL. If you go to YouTube and type LPL, it'll bring you right to it. If you type LCS, it'll bring you to the North American one. So,
yeah, okay.
Have to type the name of the league in.
So, in terms of, this is another thing that you would not think about, starting lineups, right? Because these teams have players, and you're very possibly gonna get burnt by zeros. So, where can people go to get starting lineups? How often do they change after they've been announced? Because I don't think very many people are gonna stay awake until 4 o'clock in the morning, Central Time. So what are some of the ways that people can go about finding those?
So I'll say they basically never change once they're announced.
Okay.
You don't necessarily need to worry very much about subs in North America and Europe. They only play best of one. Most of the teams only have like one of each player on their lineup. Sometimes they have one sub, but usually the only way you find out about those subs is like on Twitter. The team will make a post like, hey, we're going to try this guy out this week or whatever. In China and Korea, it's a hard difference between the two regions. China, the lineups are announced way ahead of time. If you go to Weibo, which is Chinese Twitter, and just type in the name of the team or type in LPL or something in the search bar, you'll see the lineups. Like, they'll come up there. It's Weibo,
okay.
Weibo. There are also some people on Twitter that will repost it. I have a friend, Mr. Malmanger. If you watch, he retweets some of my stuff, so you might be able to see him. He posts the lineups every day, so you can just go see them. However, you can still get screwed in China and Korea because they can sub in between games. So the lineups never change after they're announced. Game one lineup is always going to be the lineup that you saw on Twitter. But game two and three, you never know. The coach might decide he wants to switch to somebody else or whatever. Korea, hard difference. They specifically do not allow the teams to tell you who they're playing. They're anti-gambling. They don't want it to be a thing. And they will not announce their lineups. If you go on to and ask them about it, they'll specifically tell you that they will not tell you. The cast will not talk about who's playing today until after lock time, basically. So Korea, you're taking a shot. I mean, I still play a lot of Korea, and if you know the teams, you'll usually know who's probably going to start, but you can definitely just get hit with a random sub in Korea, no doubt about it.
Okay, and I guess, I mean, we got to talk a little bit about gambling, right? Because everyone loves to gamble. So, I mean, a lot of the things from the gambling market are going to feed into DFS. So obviously that would lead to, how are you generating leans for some of these bets? Are you riding a lot of favorites? Do you bet, underdogs against the higher variance teams? Like, what are some of the angles you can take to bet League of Legends matches?
My by far most profitable betting for League of Legends is futures. Preseason, I did notice that some sites have shut this down this season, but you used to be able to parlay futures as well, and I made a lot of money parlaying futures in the various leagues about who was going to win each league. That's been very good for me. I'll say I'm not like a super – I use a lot of analytics, but I'm not a super like analytics system-based guy. I have some
people
that do all their betting based on, they just look at what their projections say and just take whatever it says to take. Almost all of my bets are just based on watching the matches and knowing the teams and how they play and saying like, well, I just don't think this guy is going to be able to defend mid lane against this guy and the jungle synergy is too good and blah, blah, blah. Stuff like that is where most of my bets come from. If you're going to bet underdogs, like I said before, I would bet the most aggressive teams. You can also just find little edges. Like there's a team in Europe called G2. I'm wearing their jersey while we're talking right now. G2, they almost always win, but you can watch them over the course of a season get less and less interested because they just always win. And
yeah,
we talk about it on my podcast all the time about you got to watch the troll cycle for G2 because after they play a certain number of games, they just start doing wacky stuff. And then that's when you can make some money against them. So there's a lot of different random little things you can do. A lot of them for me involve, just knowing a lot about the game.
Well, I mean, so the point you're making is one that I would make to everyone about any market when things get back running up is like, yeah, no, you're not going to know anything about the NFL or the NBA or Major League Baseball that other people don't know, but you might know something about a women's tennis match that someone else doesn't know. You might know something more about a rugby match than someone else might know, because the way that I imagine literally the way that bookmakers' lines are made for League of Legends is one book makes the line, probably a Chinese book, right? Sports gambling is legal in China, right?
Yeah, and what you're saying is true. One book makes a line and everybody else copies it. It's gotten a little bit lately. It looks like there might be two or three people that are making the initial lines that are being copied, but that's definitely what it is. And the esports lines are definitely softer than every other sport. I've bet other sports too, and like not at a high level, but I've bet plenty of other sports. And you can tell immediately that the edges in esports are larger than they are in other sports.
Yeah, I think that is, that's just great advice. Is if you guys are out there listening to this, you probably are someone who's wanting to find an edge, or you're just like a hopeless gambling addict, which either way, you're my brother in arms because I'm with you on both of those things. But you just try and seek out markets that are undiscovered or that other people don't care about, because there are a lot of edges left in those markets. So, dude, I'm very excited to continue playing League of Legends. I hope that everyone who listened to this enjoyed it. I hope that they learned something. Anything you want to plug? Any last shout outs? Anything like that?
Yeah, no, not really. If you come hit me up at the esports plug on Twitter, I love talking to people, and I'll answer pretty much any questions that I can. If anybody wants to play or something, we'll play some fun games. I do have a podcast that the link is on my Twitter, the Gold Card Podcast, that I do with some other guys, guys who I consider really sharp, and then an amateur who kind of keeps us on our toes by asking us lots of questions. And that'll give you a good idea at least of who we think is going to win the games. It's a betting podcast more than DFS, but it'll at least tell you who we think is going to win, and then you can decide how to construct your lineups based on who we think is going to win.
Okay, very cool, man. Well, I really appreciate the time. Everyone go ahead and give John a follow over at the Esports Plug, and we'll be back with more quarantine content soon, later this week.
Build digital-first customer relationships with Salesforce Digital 360. Connect every marketing, commerce, and digital experience on a single platform. Innovate fast with easy-to-launch sites, campaigns, and apps. That's more relationships, more revenue, more return, and more success. Salesforce Digital 360. Hear from our customers at sfdc.co/digital360.